Welcome to this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast, Clearcast, your source for security clearance, intelligence community, espionage, national security, and defense contracting updates. In our exclusive interviews with intelligence community and government leaders. Hello, hello, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast. I'm your host, Katie, Content Marketing Manager at ClearanceJobs.com. And over here at Clearance Jobs, we love talking about cybersecurity. Cybersecurity for everyday users, but also particularly for security clearance holders. And so today we have former Vice Admiral Mike Lefevre of the U.S. Navy. He is the former director of strategic operational planning at the National Counterterrorism Center. And so Mike heads up Concentric, which is one of the world's most influential privately held security firms. He's also a co-author of a best-selling book, Endgame First, A Leadership Strategy for Navigating Crisis and Business. And in the book, he details how the national security industry has changed rapidly over the last few decades. And Mike can also outline what companies might be able to do to avoid or survive a cyber attack and the lessons learned when it comes to owning the cyber solutions company that he manages. So we're going to talk, I love human interest stories, so we're going to talk a little bit about his story and then a little bit about the book and how the threat landscape has changed and what companies should really be thinking about when it comes to cyber strategy. So Mike, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Katie, this is a great honor. Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, I love hearing about folks' journeys and where they came from and how it kind of put them where they are today. So let's talk about your time in the military prior to transitioning out.
Cool. Yeah, I went to the Naval Academy. And then when I graduated, I became a surface warfare officer, which meant, you know, it was cruisers and destroyers and ships. So I was fortunate enough to have different series of jobs, commands at all level. I had command of a destroyer, a command of a strike group, command of a squadron, command of a couple joint task forces. My career kind of took a little sidestep. When I was a strike group commander, I got called to lead the earthquake relief effort in Pakistan back in 2005. A lot of what some of the initial story of the book's about. It was a horrific earthquake, 7.6 shallow earthquake, 80,000 people died, 178,000 injured, 3.5 million people homeless, and it was the Himalayas and winter was coming. And so I led that. And so I joke and say no kind deed goes unpunished. A couple of years later, I was sent back to lead the defense representative for Pakistan through very tumultuous years from 2008 all the way through the bin Laden raid. And then after that is when I moved over to the National Counterterrorism Center as a director for strategic ops and plans. So a lot of ship driving, a lot of times at sea, a lot of experience by travel agent was pretty good. And then the last probably 10 or 15 years was a lot in counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, and the like. So it was really a wonderful career.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds insane. So What kind of initially made you make the switch from being in the supporting the Navy to doing the Counterterrorism Center? How was that transition kind of moving from, you know, one entity to that agency?
Yeah, it was funny. The job that was for the strategic operational planning has been notoriously like a 3-star. So I was a vice admiral at the time. So I was there. I relieved the lieutenant general before me. Before that, there was an admiral. And then the person behind me was a Air Force general and then an Army general that leads it. And it was from the background that we have from our planning and the way we do planning in the military to be able to do large scale. And it was a unique job because it really was kind of, I did work through the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, but we also worked for ODNI, but then I worked kind of directly for the White House that developed the policy for counterterrorism worldwide. So it was a very unique job and a lot of fun to be able to craft that element after being so intense in a region like the Middle East, then to look at counterterrorism across the globe.
Right. I mean, You're the grown-up here doing grown-up work. So
that would be a debate, but that's all right.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about a little bit about Concentric. And before we get to that, so I actually just pulled up my report. And this is really interesting because, you know, I work in content and media now. And so the Eclipse report says that my risk is very high. And so from a networking perspective, a job seeking perspective, it's obviously important to maintain your, you know, online profiles.
Yeah.
Make sure that you are, as a security clearance holder, make sure that you're not potentially making yourself an even bigger target. So right. I love that. Let's talk about that scrub that y'all do for your clients and just kind of generally about the importance of, you know, privacy and cybersecurity while we're networking and doing everything we do online.
Yeah, a great question, because, you know, I led the White House Cybersecurity Forum as my role as the director there at NCTC. And that was pretty fascinating at a, you know, kind of that global scale. But what was fascinating as I moved into the commercial side, and I worked at a cybersecurity company that did some work for the government as well in cyber, was the threat landscape of what's happening in today's environment. And I think then we had the big shock of COVID, because in the past, you know, you'd be caught under your umbrella by the company or by the units and the servers and all those security means in place, even those, you know, as we know, can be defeated. But then all of a sudden we all started working from home, and boy, did that open up the threat spectrum considerably for all those folks now that were no longer under that big protection of their government server. They were working from their home computers, home sources, home, you know, and so it provided a opportunity quite a bit for what we're seeing. I think what we're seeing today, how easy ransomware is and so forth. And then the ubiquitous of how much is out there online, which I call digital dust. We had a cybersecurity company that was working in the small to medium business range. Unfortunately, in a round of funding, it didn't do as well. But what we learned also from that was a mix of cybersecurity, but also what seems to be very attractive now for our clients and for ourselves is this privacy aspect. So this opportunity we have called Eclipse does PII removal from, we go to over 250, 300 different aggregate sites and are able to pull information offline as long as it's not a legal document to try to obfuscate what's out there. That makes it fairly easy for people to do a fairly easy search to find out where you live, what assets you have, what donations you've provided, where your spouses, partners, significant others go to school, go to work, live. And in today's politically charged environment, any of us are influencers in a way. They make a statement politically, economically, socially, environmentally, whatever. There's somebody out there that probably will find offense with it and then uses that fairly easily accessible information to dox and box and do other nefarious things to you that either in social media or in the dark web or deep web.
Let's talk a little bit more generally about some of the other sort of pillars under how what Concentric does or operates under.
Well, we consider it kind of the full spectrum, you know, almost this PII removal and understanding what's out there online and in social media. So there's, you know, that removal, the Eclipse. We can do active online monitoring for some of our clients that start having quite a bit of visibility. Our clientele has been ultra high net worth individuals and family offices, as well as large corporations and their C-suite. So monitoring the sentiment on that, we've done some stuff for companies that were going IPO to be able to find out what's out there online before they do go IPO in the social media and in the deep web and dark web as well. And so then we can actually, depending on the profile, recommend improvements to your security, physical security, whether or not you need drivers, whether or not you need executive protection, and we can cover you when you travel domestically and internationally, as well as just an environment you're in. And so we do the full spectrum from that privacy removal all the way to armed support if you need it. But we tend to do it in a softer touch because the large showy, you know, just as we know from our environment, serve it over in war zones and other areas, high threat areas, you don't want to bring it, you don't want to bring attraction to you and kind of like, oh, that must be somebody important. So we tend to do a little bit more blend in, darken with the crowd, but be able to do a more lower profile. And then hopefully with our intelligence products, we don't put our clients or people at risk that would be in an environment that we'd have to do something, you know, spectacular to save them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So it makes sense, you know, sort of your call to Concentric and the work that y'all are doing, just, you know, doing, supporting the military and other sort of national security efforts and the counterterrorism center and doing some of that other work with the intelligence community. But what it was your call to work sort of in this space?
I think it was part of the mission. It was a time, you know, for us, it was at that point, end of my career, there was whether or not you move to a 4-star job, there's only very few of those. And it was time for me to retire. My wife at the time was CIA for 32 years. And so we retired together and went into the market to do, because we thought from our services and experiences, how do we give that back? So I did some work with the joint staff in helping new generals and flag officers, as well as the senior enlisted in a program called Capstone and Keystone, to help mentor them as to what to expect in the national security environment, as well as in the outside, as well as some of my experience in joint task forces. And then I would mentor out at sea or in different command climates. I worked at McChrystal Group for a while, consulting the Fortune 50 companies, mainly on leadership and team development, how they can lead their organizations to success. And so I always had this passion for leadership. Then the cybersecurity company, because it had a mission giving back to the government and helping to protect what we do. And then this opportunity arose that was very mission focused. And we have a national security bent. We look at world events and what's going on to be able to help our clients understand the second and third order effects of the events that are going on in Israel or Ukraine or in the South China Sea, in Indonesia about the elections, whatever the case may be, is how will that potentially impact the businesses that they're running, from supply chain to the environment and what they could expect. So it's really kind of a neat crowd of a network that we're in to be able to provide that extra level of security and protection and understanding for those folks in those roles.
Yeah, all very important stuff. And you certainly have a lot of experience within leadership to kind of back that up. And so let's talk about the book, Endgame First, A Leadership Strategy for Navigating Crisis and Business. Tell me maybe a few of the highlights from that book, your favorite parts.
Yeah, there are probably maybe three big things from it. One is, having done that earthquake experience that I talked about earlier, I was there for 7 months. I had a joint task force of men and women from across the country and even some coalition forces, Australian and some NATO forces working with me. And we were responsible for saving thousands of lives during that event. And boy, you talk about personally and professionally rewarding. That was quite an experience. But in that, and then later when I went back as a senior mil rep, the horrific floods occurred in Pakistan that, you know, we're even reading about now after some of the monsoons. And so, but what I noticed in these very incredible disasters was there was actually a pattern. There was a taxonomy to the pattern of the phases of a crisis and how they would merge and what kind of decision-making you needed to make through those different 4 levels of crises. That became a pattern that we'd recognize. And gosh, whether it's, you know, your company, whether it's COVID, whether you're, you know, you're in a startup company, but those phases all seem to matter. The second big thing was probably how we got the title Endgame First. I was on the ground. My boss, General Abizade and General Doug Lute, came ashore about a couple weeks into this operation. Now, here's an admiral 700 miles from saltwater. My good friend, General John Allen, classmate, said, hey, we need a good admiral in the Himalayas. But they came ashore, they kind of looked, and they said, hey, we have a bad habit of the military going places and not leaving. What's your exit strategy? Well, heck, I mean, I was on the ground for about 3 weeks. We were doing the assessment. We were flown in forces. We actually built over 1,500 in country. And I had thousands of folks around the world supporting with relief supplies and efforts and airlift and sea lift that helped provide the incredible impact that we had there in Pakistan. And I looked at them like, holy smokes. But it was really prescient in that they said, hey, Mike, we want you to provide humanitarian relief and we'd like to improve U.S.-Pakistan relations. And so at the end of this, that was the strategic end state. That was the end game that I was looking for. And so as you realize that all these crises come to an end and you get to be able to shape how they're going to end or how you're going to do it. And so that was one of the big key lessons is focus on that end game when you go into something or how do you want to end this? And, you know, when we went through COVID, we lost 40% of our business due to travel. But we looked at our business and said, hey, when this ends, we want to be shaped like this. And when we did, we grew 47% in 2022 with some of the investment we did in our country and some of the pivots we did. So it's really effective, whether it's large scale or small scale or whatever. Then the third one is just kind of a combination of things that I discovered in my leadership journey through the 38 years in service with relationships, communication, taking care of people, mental health. How do you adapt and adjust? How do you look at events and learn from them in an after action review to be able to make these, learn from it and make these enduring changes so that you constantly are in improvement and always improving what your outcome is. And so I think those are the three big things that hopefully people could walk away from the book, and we thought it would be worth sharing. The other neat thing is when I was at Chris Group, the team of teams was coming out and some of the feedback we got was, hey, this is great. This is all military crap. All these organizations, you know, we're in the civilian community. We don't operate like that. Ironically, there is a lot of things that can apply. But I told that to the executive chairman, Roderick Jones, of our company. And I said, hey, to do this, where you come in is your amazing entrepreneurial spirit is how do these lessons, when I was telling you about the earthquake and when we were going through COVID and what we needed to do, you were able to translate that into business acumen and make sense of it and help shape the company. And so that's the other factor that's in the book. Roderick Jones is my co-author, to be able to add that. Here's what Mike learned, applying this to the business senses. Here's how you would apply it to your startup or your business or whatever. And I think that's the power of the book as well.
Well, and all of those things are beautiful things. I am constantly trying to improve myself from all the lessons learned I gather on a weekly basis.
We're all human. And boy, is that I think one of my favorite talks is the things that, you know, my failures in life and what you can learn from them. I think it was the most popular one.
Yeah. Well, it's good to fail. And I know that we talk about that a lot at Clearance Jobs as well. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of sort of being adaptable to, you know, whatever business environments you're working in, COVID, things of that nature, let's talk about the threat landscape. I mean, that's obviously changed decade to decade, year to year even. And so let's talk about how our cyber workforce really needs to prepare.
Yeah. I think it's this constant vigilance. It's not a matter of when or if or when it's, you know, and a lot of things. I think you almost have to assume that people are already inside your network. And how do you prepare for that? How would you prepare for a breach? So we do a lot of, we do some things with our clients, you know, to prepare them and actually go through tabletop exercises. What would happen in a ransomware attack? Who are your decision makers? What do you need to do? How do you set up for redundancies? How do you set up for preserving your data so that when, not if, but when it happens, you are prepared to be able to isolate it and continue to be able to manage, adapt, and be resilient through that turbulent times. And also understand ahead of times what that might involve, who needs to decide, and how fast you need to make that decision. Because as you know, in many companies, you know, you have a CSO and a CSO. And sometimes it's, you know, the people in the network are just trying to put the network back together again. where the people maybe on the security side realize that it was a hack, and if we put it back together again, it's gonna be worse on the network. And so it's that tension of understanding where that comes to play to have the best outcome should, you know, or when that attack occurs.
Yeah. So with, you know, the cyber workforce needing to prepare, I know that one thing that we talk about a lot is the fact that we don't have as big of a cyber workforce as we need. And so let's talk about how that kind of relates to what a company's cyber strategy needs to be. I mean, in recruitment, retention, but also like an actual cyber strategy and, you know, being able to, I think, near impossible to avoid a cyber attack these days, but at least to, you know, put in mitigating steps or, you know, survive one when it does happen.
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of it, you know, needless to say, is the training. The constant training that's required, the constant awareness, the constant review of all your principles inside your network. Have ISO standards if you can, you know, whether it's a 27001 or other, to be able to be compliant with the sensitive data and information you have and the protection you have around it. But, you know, even in all the things we see today, the ransomware and attacks, phishing attempts, how easy it is and how many, you know, I think I just saw an article that, you know, historic numbers again this last year in 2023 of the number of attacks, the money and the services that were lost because of that. And it always comes down to, unfortunately, a human mistake or human error that caused some of the most horrible breaches, as well as the awareness to, and you talk about people, and that awareness and understanding what's going on in your network, because the insider threat continues also to be such a critical environment. And then people just unknowingly meaning well, but they're working from home in the hybrid work environment, and their network comes under their, you know, server, or, you know, comes under attack, and all of a sudden, or their computer becomes infected. And it's easy because that's where most of the attacks surface from, is from an outside that snakes their way into the bigger platform to be able to do and understand the network, and then when ready to be able to attack and lock out the circuits.
Log in to your VPN, y'all.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm hearing. But, you know, also I'm, you know, constant training for our workforce, but I mean that constant improvement that you kind of, you know, spoke to when we discussed your book. And so let's talk about any big, if you're willing to be vulnerable with us, any big lessons learned from your own career in the military, the government, or, you know, the private sector work that you've done?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think the recurring themes are, you know, stuff that you haven't kept up with. If you have large server networks, you assume that all your patches across your network are being performed. And then when you realize that even though you think they are, they're not, that opens up another vulnerability. And once somebody's inside, how hard it is to fight them to get them out, to be able to tighten down that network and get them off the server, get them off that device. How easy it is now, you know, and the sophistication with some of the AI to be able to replicate. We've had a couple wonderful emails. Again, you know, our texts from me as the CEO telling the finance department to transfer money, or, hey, this bill and you need to pay this individual, and not having the two-person controls and double checks in could also lead to transfer of quite a bit of money, in just not having those right standard operating procedures or double checks, because the realism of people being able to impersonate your name, you know, if they don't do little checks about, you know, what's underneath that name, what that email address really was, where it came from, even though the whole script of the email and all the different tags and, you know, very authentic looking emails that can very well be deceptive in today's market and be vulnerable. And so it's that constant vigilance. We have a system, we do training each month. We have an online called Wiser. We talk about it because of the sensitivity, even now in this company, of the clients we have. Protecting that sensitive information is really important, because a breach like that would be devastating, as it is to most companies. And when I was, you know, in the cyber business or in government, some of those networks also came under attack from third-party actors that are very prevalent around the world, you know, the usual North Korea and China and Iran and Russia that are, you know, very good at it and, you know, basically state sponsored to be able to steal the intelligent IP of our companies and how they download and get access, steal so much information from us, as well as then support the idea of ransomware or crypto hacking and so forth that it allows those particular autocracies to continue to gain money.
Sure. I mean, it's grown up work and it's grown up problems, and we need bright minds to help, you know, kind of combat some of these issues. As you heard, my online scrub, the risk is high. So just everyone listening, realize that I will not be texting you to transfer money into any account. So if you get that text, it is not me. Well, Mike, I really appreciate you joining the podcast today. Thank you for being vulnerable with us. Thank you for telling us about your journey. For listeners, if you need any information on cybersecurity awareness, cybersecurity training, or to get a new cybersecurity career, you can always visit news.clearancejobs.com.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of ClearedCast. Hit the subscribe button and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. For more security clearance updates and national security career advice, subscribe to news.clearancejobs.com. If you have an active clearance, refresh your profile and search Cleared Careers at clearancejobs.com.